Welcome to this podcast from Adelaide Place Baptist Church. We are a community of disciples, apprentices of Jesus, who live and work in the city of Glasgow, and it's our vision to join God in the renewal of all things. Our discipleship to Jesus is for all of our lives, so as well as listening to this podcast, we'd love for you to join us on a Sunday morning, or get involved in one of our missional communities, which are across the city throughout the week. Our prayer is that you encounter Jesus in some way through this podcast. More information can be found at apbc.net.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you're really well and keeping going during these strange times. Stephen started off last week by mentioning that he was from Northern Ireland. That's one of the things that connects me and Stephen. And we're similar background and actually means we've got an affinity bias. But one of the ways of telling, if you're from Northern Ireland, one of the ways of telling what your background is by asking this sort of innocent but sometimes loaded question: what school did you go to? There are normally two motivations behind that. One is that sort of desire for connection. It's the idea of, you know, if you're from Northern Ireland, you're probably related to someone's third cousin anyway, so there's probably some connection you want to make with them. But there's a more subtle background to that, which is it can tell you whether you're from one background or another background. I went to a school which has the word royal in the name. And that differentiates me from people who went to a school with saint in the name. And you can tell, you can make a lot of assumptions about a person by what type of school they went to. You can begin to make assumptions about their background, about their outlook on politics, about their religious faith, and about so many other things, which may be right, or they may just be assumptions. And that's an example of something where I've spent many years trying to unlearn some of that. But I think some of us in our AP family have actually experienced those subtle assumptions in deeper and much more personal ways. Let's listen to a couple of stories from some of the members of our family.
My experience with assumptions has very often been based on my appearance, my skin colour, my background, and people have assumed where I was from. People have accused me of stealing, and I've seen their behaviour around me change as well, like holding their handbags more closely, checking me up and down, and even my passport at security being checked more closely and for longer than, for example, Rachel's, who's travelling with me at the time, and hers doesn't need more than 3 seconds to be verified. These are all questions, remarks, and behaviors that make you feel less than or make you feel unworthy of something. Yeah, it makes you feel that you have to work hard, for example, at school or workplace to be seen as equal. Anything other than that is an act of defiance and not just you being yourself.
So my dad was a working class man, very working class background, left school young and spent his life in working in the steel industry in Lanarkshire. So worked in heavy industry all his life and had very working class attitudes and values, and the consequential ill health, poorer health that goes along with that background. When his health started to fail, I would often go with him to the many hospital appointments that he had to have, and sometimes the doctors were lovely and were able to just really establish a rapport and have a good conversation with my dad. But I can remember one time, so sometimes they weren't, and I remember one time in particular where the doctor that we went to see was really quite condescending and really quite rude towards my dad, and felt quite upset by this. I felt that my dad had been quite judged within this consultation, and that someone had mistaken an absence of a further education, a university education, for a lack of intelligence in someone, and had mistaken poor health for just a willful neglect of their health. Yeah, so I actually do remember feeling a lot more upset than my dad seemed to be by it. Bias can have an effect on an interaction for both the giver and the receiver of the judgment. And I think that not meeting my dad on equal terms and not being able to establish a rapport with my dad, I feel like ultimately it was the doctor who lost out on that one.
One of his first assumptions that I don't speak English well, or that I, in my speaking French, is based on lineage rather than just learning it at school like anyone else. Another was that I wasn't born here, or wherever I was born, it's not here, as in not of the majority culture at that time, and or by default that I'm from Africa anyways. I was born in Belt Hill. And for others, there's that my surname being different entitles people, I guess, a right to not really try pronouncing it. I've had people just add vowels however they feel like it. And I think one that has intrigued me for a while is that a lot of people have assumed that black people are one of two things. And they often, it has often been said in this term, oh, you're not like the others. So, for instance, that, you know, some people have jokingly said that my understanding and enjoyment of so-called sophisticated, see, Eurocentric cultures makes me, quote, a white man in a black man's body, or that because I have a stable, loving family and I'm well-educated, or I've assimilated into majority culture, etc., that I'm not like the other people that they assume to be immigrants, assume me to be the same. Or in that same vein, they simultaneously refer to others, suggesting that, or those that haven't learned to speak English very well, or don't work high-paying jobs, or don't seem to be well-educated. And that seems that, as much as it's obviously a race-tinge slight on that group of people they're referring to, it also, to them, suggests that I am an outlier to that sake as well.
In general, I would say assumptions made about me have usually benefited me, and I've always been fairly and well treated based on my appearance. In the 10 years that we've been together, I've seen Pacenza had assumptions made about him regularly. And he isn't always treated fairly, and he isn't, and quite often he's not treated the same as myself. Being in a mixed race relationship, it makes these differences in treatments based on assumptions a lot more noticeable, and because of that it makes it really frustrating, because you can see the differences in treatment right in front of you.
So really, thank you very much to Paciencia, to Rachel, to Nathan and to Shona for sharing their genuine experiences of things that have deeply touched them and their identity and how other people approach their identity. So thank you to them for that. This morning, we're going to be looking at unconscious bias, which is a way of trying to understand how this operates in our psychology and our understanding of other people. Daniel Kahneman, about 10 years ago, wrote in a book called Thinking Fast and Slow that the human brain operates on two levels. So system one is fast and instinctive and emotional. System two is slower and more deliberative and much more logical and rational. Complex thinking, slow. Think of doing a complex mental arithmetic question like multiply 17 times 24, or work out how to use an unfamiliar app for the first time, or anything that needs rational analysis. You can only do that slowly, and you can only do that one at a time. By contrast, system one thinking is fast. Your brain's processing thousands and thousands of inputs every second and is reacting to them. And all of these are learned skills, so things that we learn right from the very start of our lives, and we grow up with them. For example, being able to quickly assess threats. Are footsteps behind you someone who's out for a run in the morning, or is it someone running after you to try and attack you? Or are you able to very quickly read the facial expressions of people who you're in a meeting with? Are they annoyed at you? Are they reacting positively to what you're doing? Or what's that reaction? This type of thinking also reinforces likeness. You'll naturally gravitate towards people who are like you. It's partly that affinity bias between me and Stephen. You know, we're both from Northern Ireland. The surface, so there's a connection, and that gives us something to build our relationship on. It's not obviously not the only thing that me and Stephen have got in common or build our relationship on, but it's a good connection point. And that connection is an expression of unconscious bias. It's our unintended people preference. It happens automatically. It's triggered by our brain making quick judgments and assessments of people and situations. It's caused by a variety of external factors. It's caused by our backgrounds, our cultural environment, our personal experiences. Everyone has it. Doesn't make us bad. It just makes us human. But there's a negative side. And I think we've heard from our AP family just earlier about how those assumptions that people make about us really can affect the interactions you have with officials, like passport control, interactions you have with employers, interactions you have with colleagues, and so on. I particularly see it in the workplace, you know, in things like recruitment, where it's very easy to recruit people who are like you, and very difficult for people who are not like you sometimes to get past some of those unconscious barriers to get a fair chance. And you've got to make, as an employer, you've got to make opportunities for people and actually recognize your unconscious bias and try and do something different. In customer service, it is the same thing. You know, how you respond to someone who has a different accent or a different educational background in customer service is an important thing in actually giving an equal opportunity, an equal service to everybody. It even affects behavior in meetings. Are there people who you will not listen to because they've got a particular background or manner? And there are other people who you will give deep respect to because you look up to them or there's an affinity with them. And you've got to be careful about that. In church, how does unconscious bias influence the songs that we sing? How does it influence more subtly the people that we invite into leadership or the people that we give public roles, like standing at the front and talking? How does it impact the people that we invite into our missional communities and even into our homes? How does it impact the people that we listen to or the books that we read? Coincidentally, today is Racial Justice Sunday. I only learned that at 8 o'clock this morning. So we're looking at this particularly through a lens of racial justice. But biases, conscious or unconscious, also cover a whole number of different dimensions. It could be from any social group or personal category. It could be age. It could be gender. It could be someone's identity, their physical abilities, their religious background, their accent, their sexual orientation, their weight, their political opinions. Many other characteristics will lead to this unconscious bias. And we all have it. We can't completely rid ourselves of it because it's part of how we process the world and how we process information. But we can recognize it, and we can begin to take action to make sure that we minimize that in our personal interactions. I could be saying this as someone who employs people. I could be saying this in a work context. But actually, it has some implications in our discipleship context as well. It's not just about how we treat people at work. It's about how we treat people in life. And that reaches into our discipleship as well. So let's have a look at how the Bible treats this issue of assumptions and bias and so on. So I think the first thing I want to say is that in the Bible, God is continually challenging negative assumptions. There are many instances of this, and particularly what God's doing is challenging the negative assumptions that people have particularly of people from different, who are different from the dominant culture, whether that be the Hebrews in the Old Testament or whether that be the, you know, the people of Jewish faith in the New Testament, or indeed the early church in the New Testament. Let's take a short walk through a couple of examples from the life of Jesus and the early disciples. John chapter 4 has got a good conversation that Jesus has with a Samaritan woman at a well in Samaria as Jesus and the disciples were passing through that area. Now, if you've got a little bit of understanding of the social and cultural background of that time, you'll realize that the Samaritans were a different ethnic grouping from Jewish people who were worshipping in Jerusalem. The Samaritans had were effectively a cousin group of the Jewish people. And they had a different outlook, a different view of where to worship God and so on. And so there's a lot of tension between those two groups. You see that pick up in the story of the Good Samaritan as well. But this story of Jesus with the woman at the well is full of assumptions. It's full of assumptions that the woman has about who Jesus is. Jesus is an itinerant Jewish rabbi, so she automatically makes assumptions that Jesus wouldn't want to speak with her. And she questions that. She makes assumptions about Jesus' view about worship and about God. There are the disciples' assumptions. When they come back, they're surprised that Jesus is even talking to this woman, because there was also the gender divide, that rabbis weren't meant to speak to women one-to-one. But contrast that with Jesus' view. He's really open to her. He begins the conversation by a gentle request, which is, "Can I have a drink?" And really opens the way to that conversation, which opens up the woman's life to Jesus and helps him to begin to step into her life and show that she can be accepted, she can be understood, she can be impacted by his life working with her. Isn't that fantastic, the way that Jesus just doesn't make those assumptions, but actually begins to gently inquire of the woman and learns about her, and then is able to influence and support her life? Similarly, there are the instances of Jesus' encounter with tax collectors like Zacchaeus in Luke 19 and Matthew in Matthew 9. Now, tax collectors were, in a sense, outcasts from their society. They were operating on behalf of the Roman occupiers, and they were generally ripping off the public and taking money from them. They were already judged by society. People were making assumptions of them, but Jesus didn't. Jesus saw people who were ready to change. He saw people who wanted change in their lives. You know, Zacchaeus wouldn't have climbed that tree if he hadn't wanted to interact, if he hadn't wanted to learn something. And that approach opened up a whole new community of people. Jesus gets criticized for having dinner with these social outcasts. But that was his job. That was his purpose. That was his mission, to bring people in and to not make assumptions about people. And the final example is of the Apostle Peter, who had a couple of very strange dreams in Acts 10, where God seemed to be challenging his whole worldview about what was clean and what was unclean. And you remember the dream where this big sheet full of unclean animals was lowered in front of Peter, and God was inviting him to come and eat of those unclean animals. So in that context, it probably would have been, you know, a bit of bacon and some shellfish. So Peter was invited to do that, but that was not, that was something that he would not have touched. It was not kosher. It was not acceptable for him. But God was going, look, here's a different way. And that led directly to an interaction with a Roman leader called Cornelius, who was open and willing and interested in the Jewish faith and the new Jesus faith. Peter would not have naturally even gone into Cornelius's house, let alone sit down and have a meal with him. But that's what happened, through God opening Peter's mind to say, look, I want to invite you in. I want you to go and be present with this person called Cornelius. That was such a significant breakthrough moment in the early church. It opened the early church from being purely a Jewish sect to something that had universal appeal. That's part of the reason why we're here. So this example is of Jesus and the early disciples stretching their comfort zones, breaking them out of their assumptions about who God was and who God was wanting to include. US poet and activist Brandy Miller writes this: Jesus wasn't ignorant of the culture he lived in. He was deeply critical of it and insisted that justice is at the center of the gospel. He knew the oppression happening in his community and invited his disciples to recognize their environment, ask questions about it, and respond to create a different world. So God challenges those negative assumptions. Secondly, our faith encourages us into self-examination, to look at ourselves and to be aware of ourselves in front of God. A few Bible passages that pick that out. Psalm 139 says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. God, look into me, understand me." Luke 6, Jesus says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and you ignore that massive plank in your own?" What's our perspective telling us? What are we looking at in others that we see as different but we don't recognize in ourselves? So be self-aware. And the reading that David gave us this morning in Luke 18 about the Pharisee and the tax collector at the temple, the behavior of the person who was looking at themselves honestly was the one that was singled out by Jesus as being honest, open, humble, and admired behavior. And finally, Paul cites the example of Jesus himself when he writes in Philippians 2, "In humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you look to the interests of others." What God values is a posture of humility rather than a posture of pride. A posture of recognizing that we're not the center of the universe, but other people have value. A posture that doesn't seek to judge and make assumptions, but a posture that reflects on our own attitudes, reactions, and behaviors. Friends, that's not being woke. That's being awake. That's being disciples. So what's our practical response here? Let's go back to our AP family and listen to what they say.
I think we could see people as individuals and not try to categorise or group them. If we took time to get to know people and find out who they truly are instead of who we think they are based on what category we think they fit into. I think that we're all guilty of making assumptions about people, and quite often we don't know we're making those assumptions. I believe it's on all of us to bring those unconscious thoughts into our conscious, as when we're aware of them, that's when we can change them and we can try and see people for who they really are.
Yes, from where I sit, I'd probably say put the long yards in, essentially, to stop assuming, allowing the brain to kind of default to presumptions which aren't often historically accurate anyway. But I think more so than that, treat everyone the same, i.e. that we're all fearfully and wonderfully made by the same God, and that includes our race and our diversity and everything within that. You know, God made man and said it was good. He didn't say it was good if you were of a certain race, or good if you were of a certain culture or background. He said it was good, and that was the period.
If I had to say one thing that we could do to build a community that values individuality and difference, my thing would be to step outside our comfort zone.
I think asking ourselves if there's ever been a situation where we've assumed something about someone or said something that has or could have made someone feel judged based on their race or background, and working towards changing that view by getting to know all individuals, who they are, what their background is an important step towards such community.
Thank you again to those people who shared what this means for them. I think there are three simple actions we can take. First one is be honest, and be particularly honest with ourselves. And that's particularly true if we're from the majority culture, if we're dealing with assumptions that we make because we're just part of that crowd. We need prayer, we need confession, we need reflection. There's an ancient spiritual practice called examen. It's part of Ignatian spirituality. And that may help in helping us to reflect on our behavior and our encounters each day. It might help us uncover our biases and just open us up for change. You might also want to seek feedback from others on your approach and your attitude. Now, this is particularly important if you're in a leadership role. Go and ask questions of those around you and actually help them to honestly help you reflect. So something about being honest with ourselves. As Shona so eloquently put, the second action is to stretch and challenge our thinking and to get out of our comfort zone and experience new things. Think of Peter and Cornelius and the Samaritan woman. Where can you step outside your bubble? Where can you learn about new people, new experiences? Where can you learn about something that's different from what you've had? Particularly with people who are different from you, be willing to have your assumptions adjusted. Listen to people's positive stories, but also listen to their painful stories. But also don't be afraid to make mistakes. Most people will recognize your humility for what it is and your genuine desire for interaction. So don't be scared about putting your foot in it if you're doing it with honesty and openness and genuine humility. And I think that particularly applies in online communities as well, where we can very much just be part of our bubble and we're not able to step outside that mindset. And the final thing is to actively create space for others in our homes, in our missional communities, and in our wider fellowship. So don't just be in groups who are like you or like me. Invite people in and have a coffee with someone, go for a walk around the park, when that's allowed again, obviously. Eat cake, eat pizza, learn from each other. And I think that helps us as a fellowship to better reflect the kingdom. That kingdom where this key characteristic was described by Jesus as, by this, everyone will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. Let's pray together. Father God, help us to recognize where we've failed, where we've made assumptions, where we've said the wrong thing, or we've held wrong attitudes towards people who are different from us. Help us, first of all, to come in a sense of confession. And help us, Lord, to build an attitude of humility and an attitude of openness and an attitude of learning from others. Let us be inviting people into our lives, into our friendship groups, into our fellowship, so that we can learn from others, but also so that everyone can feel safe and can feel valued and can feel wanted. And Lord, that's our prayer for our fellowship, that we will be a place where those kingdom values are absolutely obvious to everybody. Amen.